When you need to refuel between meetings or running errands, or you just want a healthy snack that squashes your hunger, Wonderful Pistachios, which come in a variety of flavors and sizes, by the way, are the perfect choice to fill you up and keep you going throughout the day. Wonderful Pistachios is also a good source of protein and a zero-guilt snack. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, guys, which gives you over 10% of your daily value. And with flavors like salt and pepper, sweet chili, and seasoned salt in the shelled variety, options like chili roasted, sea salt, and vinegar or jalapeno lime in the no-shell variety, you're sure to please your taste buds while snacking healthy. So check out wonderfulpistachios.com to learn more about how these little green wonders can power up your day.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Does that mean we're recording?
Okay. Yeah, he's got the button turned on. That means we're on. See, on.
It doesn't say on. It has the time on that clock.
But I like to look
at it. Say on. Just go, oh, does that mean that the world has started turning on the clock? Okay, anyway. Well, welcome to the Jillian Michaels with
just
non-tweeter show.
Say it nicely.
The non-tweeter.
Say it nice. Say, and Janice is here to help.
And Janice is here to help you. That's interesting. That's an interesting one.
I'm glad to see you got all that. I hate to say it. I'm glad to see you got all that crap off your face.
Oh, my gosh, man. It's like my hair and my skin has not, like, seen the light of day. My actual skin, because I live under a layer of goo. I don't even know. I mean, I swear, Paige just slaps that crap on my face.
Every time you record something on television, you have to go through that process.
Every day, I've been with the goo, just makeup and hair crap in my head, and it's unbelievable. I feel, honestly, this is why when I don't work, I look like a transient. Because I would rather be dead than get in a pair of heels or put anything on my skin or burn my hair one more time. It's unbelievable. I just came from taping Dr. Phil, actually, to come and record this show with you guys.
Do a little show.
And that's actually a kind of a good transition you just teed up for me, Jay Money.
Why, with the crap on your face?
No, not the crap. No. Because I came from Dr. Phil and I wanted to talk about the stuff on Dr.
Phil. Yeah. This is all new. Now, for those who don't know, this is a new gig for you.
I guess so. We should probably, I got to say, I've been taping The Doctors, now co-host on The Doctors, right? Which who knows when this show's going to air. It'll premiere on September 12th, The Doctors.
Okay.
And I'm also a correspondent for Dr. Phil. And let me just say that thank God the baby is not here yet, because I don't think I've ever worked this hard in my life. It is
more than the other show.
I thought it was supposed to be so easy. They pitched it to me like, oh, we tape Thursday, Friday, you know, then Thursday, Friday, then the following week, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and then a week off. And I was like, oh my gosh, I'm in heaven. No. What they didn't tell me at the time when I signed on the dotted line is that there's something called a field shoot. And I've had to do everything from get a mammogram on camera, which was hideous. Hideous. I don't even want to talk about it. You'll just have to watch it, because I don't ever want to speak of it again. To, you know, flying in a 2-seater plane with a woman that's terrified of flying. I can't even tell. I mean, 13-hour days.
Serious.
Not kidding you. Haven't seen the inside of a gym in gotta be about 3 weeks now. I am hating my life. I love my job, actually. I couldn't be happier, to be honest, with the job, but it's like, it's so intense. And I'm learning, you know, I'm learning this daytime medium, which, you know, you think that people on daytime, it always seems so easy to me. I was like, oh, it's just a talking head. How hard can it be?
Yeah, it's like the cousin of prime time.
Oh, my, yeah, really? Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I was like, how hard can it be? Let me tell you, it's hard. It really is. It's hard. And there's so much, just in taping the show, there's so much going on. You know, you have a little ear thing in your ear and your producers are saying like, okay, go to break, cut to the giveaway, introduce the song, you know, this person. We want you to ask her this. Wait, did you see the woman behind you is crying? I mean, it is a whole...
It's chaos.
Chaos. It is structured chaos. And I'm so used to going on Loser and doing whatever I want to do. And of course, they butcher it. But nevertheless, I do whatever I want to do, and they just cut it up and make whatever they want, which was always really frustrating for me because I never felt like you saw the parts
of me or
of the transformations that were really important. And I felt like the information was lacking. I thought the inspiration was lacking, and it used to really frustrate me. On daytime, they want you to essentially encapsulate months of that work into minutes. It's like, we got to get to the heart of the matter, get to the point, get it out there. And it, you know, you're trying to open somebody up and get the story and break them down and go to break and, you know, share points of view with your co-hosts. And it's, let me tell you, it is.
And then do it all again the next day.
Oh my gosh. And I have to study. I've got 3 shows a day. I come home and I feel like I'm, you know, in college prior to me dropping out. with books of information on everything. It's like everything from vasectomies and tubal ligation to food policy. And you have to study. You have to go on the show and study so you know what you're talking about. It's just, it's incredible. It really is incredible. But with that said, I'm loving it. And I have to say, there's so many things I want to talk about with regard to my experiences thus far. But one of the things that comes to mind right now is that as I sit there on this stage, right, and I've got my little coffee and or my tea, because I stopped drinking my coffee, my little cup of tea, and I've got my little cards, because they give you these blue cards that essentially walk you through the beats of the show. Okay. And what that means is like, okay, this is where Travis introduces so-and-so, and then this is where you bring up points X, Y, and Z, and this is where Lisa gives away, blah, blah, blah. So you've got your cards in your hand, and I have my tea, and I'm sitting on my stool, and all the cameras are on, and the audience is there, and I can't help but go, holy crap, I made it. I wanted this for such a long time. I remember season 2 of The Biggest Loser, when originally I went into season 1 of Biggest Loser because I wanted to promote my gym. I just opened a sports medicine facility about a year before I got on Loser, and we were doing really well, but we didn't have any national exposure. And I was just starting to make a name for myself as a trainer on a national level. I was just starting to get these press hits and becoming like a go-to expert for fitness and wellness magazines and all of that. So we originally had taken Biggest Loser because I thought, well, this is going to be a good opportunity to promote my business. But by season 2 of Biggest Loser, that's when I thought to myself, wow, this can really go in a very different direction. This is not just about promoting a gym. This is about utilizing an international platform to get a message. And at the time, the message, well, that's not true. Not at the time. The message has always been about empowerment. And when you're informed, you're empowered. When you have the knowledge and the information about your health or your overall wellness, you have the ability to make choices that are going to affect dramatic change in your life. So around season 2, I was thinking to myself, okay, this television medium is a big deal. You can learn how to use this thing and change the world with it. It's a big, gigantic microphone. But I recognized that primetime wasn't really the arena to give information. They didn't want it. They would cut it out of the show.
Yeah.
It never made it onto the show. You never saw the information.
Because it wasn't entertaining.
No, you saw, like, we tempted Kelly and Lizette with M&Ms. And who took, you know, and I, you know, and I would find myself ramming my head into the wall because... Yeah. You know, the beauty of Biggest Loser is that, you know, I got to understand the power of television. I got to build a name for myself. I was given this gigantic platform, but the frustration for me with Biggest Loser is that I didn't want to use the platform necessarily in the ways that the show wanted. And the show was right. The show made a hit show. They, you know, they did their thing.
Yeah.
And God bless, because without them having created a hit show, there'd be, you know, I would likely not have had these opportunities to even do this podcast and speak with all you lovely people today. However, I was so frustrated because none of the actual information was getting imparted. So I felt like we were showing people inspirational stories and people were able to go on this emotional journey with these contestants and they were able to get inspired and they were able to get motivated and they were able to feel through the contestants things that might have been scary for them to look at inside of themselves. But there was no information. We weren't giving information. So when they went to make the change in their own life, they had no tools. You know, and that, so that was one thing that I found really difficult. And when I experienced daytime or watched daytime, that was a real forum for information. But it was still motivating. You still were uplifted. You still were inspired. I mean, if anybody's watched an episode of Oprah, I'm sure you've cried. So it's, you know, you've been inspired, you've been uplifted, and you've had that emotional connection with a human being telling their story, right? Whether it's an Oprah segment or a Loser. But on daytime, you can also connect that inspiration and that entertainment with information. And that, to me, is a real solution. So on season 2 of Loser, I knew that I needed to end up there. Somehow, I had to find a way. And that was about 7 years ago. Maybe 6 years, 6.5 years ago, 7 years ago. It's taken me this long to end up sitting in that stool with my cards, with my little cup of tea. And I've got to tell you, I did it. And the reason I'm saying that, and by the way, thank God I'm doing it the way that I am, because I am learning so much. So I have Dr. Phil to teach me. I have co-hosts that have been doing this now for 3 seasons. I have mentors in my producers and the McGraw family. And of course, Andrew Scheer, who's the EP. It's like the best environment for me because I can make mistakes. I can fall down and the show won't get canceled. It's picked up, thank goodness, for 3 years. So I can't sink it. It's unsinkable because it's already picked up. But my point here is that you can have a dream and make it happen. Whereas with Biggest Loser, that wasn't a dream. It was a fluke. I fell into it. I didn't think to myself, I want to be on an NBC primetime show and I want to be famous. Like that was never came into my mind. Loser was a fluke. And I thought, well, this will be a great platform. You know, I wanted a platform to get known as an expert. So awesome. But I didn't set out to do it. It just happened. Daytime, I set out to do. And I cannot tell you how many people told me I couldn't, told me I wouldn't, didn't believe in me, shut the door in my face, and I kept fighting and I kept persisting. And my point is that there's got to be something inside of you. Something inside of you right now, you who's listening to the segment, there has to be something inside of you that wants more, that wants something else. And if you look deeply enough, if you pause and you take a moment or an hour or a day or a week or however long to really look inside and say, what is it that I want? What is that dream that I had? Because that is what your destiny is, no matter what someone else tells you, no matter how many doors get shut in your face, no matter how many times you fail or you fall down, it's all part of the process. And I've started doing this series where I've been interviewing very successful people for the AOL homepage. Mm-hmm. So I talked with Rita Wilson, and I talked with Jamie Oliver, and I talked with Danica Patrick, and I've talked with Susie Orman, and all of them. And it's all about inspiration. It's like, how'd you get there? How'd you get where you are, right? Every single one of them has given the same, I don't want to say tip because it sounds trivial, but the same piece of advice with regard to dream manifestation or living your successful life, your happiest life, in their own way, they have all said, you've got to do what you love. So, for example, Rita said, what did you love to do as a child? Because whatever you love to do as a child is probably what you love to do as an adult. But as a kid, nobody was judging you. Nobody was telling you that it was wrong or irresponsible or immature. And Danica Patrick went on to say the same thing, because she loved go-kart racing as a kid and ended up dropping out of high school at 15 to learn how to race cars professionally in Europe. And look at her. So, you know, Danica was saying, God, there's a kid in school that's a doodler that gets in trouble all the time for sketching and doodling. She's like, that kid could be Walt Disney. That kid could become a famous animator. The, you know, Coco Chanel, I love this story. She was an orphan who used to knit and make clothes, and she was a seamstress, and she just loved it. It was an outlet for her, a creative channel for her. And again, of course, she became Coco Chanel, the House of Chanel. My point is that look inside of yourself and ask what you love, where your heart is calling you. And here's a good key, and I talked to my shrink about this. If you're jealous, look at jealousy as a blessing, because it shows you what you want. And I would talk to my shrink about being jealous of various people on daytime. I was like, I can't stand it. I'm so jealous. Right. I'm jealous. And it's like, I find myself feeling like I could do that. And, you know, why does that person get that opportunity? And he said to me, listen, here's the good part about jealousy. It shows you what you want. You know what you want. And I knew that I wanted to be here. It's kind of, look, jealousy is not a good emotion, but we all have it to varying degrees.
Certainly.
And when you can acknowledge it and go, okay, I'm jealous. I admit it. I'm jealous. What is this about? It's just envy. It shows you that you're like, okay, I'm envious of this. I'm jealous. I want what you've got. So we don't tear that other person down. We go and get it for ourselves.
We do tear them down momentarily, though. Oh, yeah. Okay?
We're not supposed to.
Yeah, we're not supposed to, but we do. Just for a minute. And then we go, okay.
Well, yeah. I'm working on doing that. But I do. I know exactly what you mean. And when I started getting really hearing myself kind of, I went through this period about 2 years ago where I was starting to sound judgmental. And I recognized that my judgment was really envy. And my envy, my jealousy was really desire. Me thinking, I want that job. I want to do that segment. I want to be imparting that information. I want the opportunity to have that platform and see what I can do with it. So I fought and I kicked and I screamed and I gave up loser, despite the fact that everyone told me not to and what would become of me. And I put in the work. I did my due diligence. I built my relationships. And to make a long story short, there I am sitting on that damn stage after 7 years of wanting it. And I am, despite the fact that I am slightly run ragged, or not even slightly, I am flat out run ragged right now. I'm loving every second of it. I love it. I love it.
But there's synchronicity in there, too. You have to admit that at the end of season two, when you were thinking, this format of loser, and this format isn't working for me, the message isn't getting across, people aren't getting their information.
Right.
At that point, do you think, I mean, that's hypothetical because it's gone.
Right.
That's, you know,
no,
that's
true.
A long time ago. Would you have been ready to be in this format? Those 7 years of waiting.
Yeah. I had to build a profile. I had to expand on my knowledge. I had to become more television savvy, obviously. One thing that I will tell you is that I often used to bitch and complain about mentors, not having mentors, how hard it was to get a mentor. Here's what I've realized later in my career is that you earn a mentor. They don't just come to you. I had to put myself in the world in a responsible way and show that I was genuine and effective to attract mentors. And when I did that, then Susie Orman started taking an interest in me. Then Dr. Phil took an interest in me. Then Maria Shriver took an interest in me. And each and every one of those people gave me the opportunity, gave me, Maria let me speak right after her at the women's conference. Dr. Phil gave me the opportunity to prove myself on the doctors. And now he and his son, Jay McGraw, have given me the job. And now he's giving me the chance to prove myself as a daytime host and come on his show as a correspondent. Susie has educated me with regard to my business and my career and the direction that I take, but you have to earn it. So you're right about serendipity and you're right about time, and it doesn't always show up when you want it or how you see it. I mean, I thought I wanted my own show. I was like, I want my own show. I want the Jillian Michaels show. I'm done being second fiddle. I can do this myself. But the truth of the matter is, I got to be honest, I love working with these doctors. I love it because, first of all, I'm learning so much. But second of all, I don't have to carry this whole thing on my own. And quite honestly, I don't know that I would be ready because you do become repetitive. Talking for 5 hours every week, doing 180 shows a year, how do you not start to loop yourself? How do you not start to sound like a tape that just replays over and over and over again? Learning how to talk to the teleprompter, learning how to manage all of the guests, learning how to be tough and then instantaneously become soft and then be funny to lighten the mood. It's like, it's a skill. It is an art form. Getting information across in that medium is an art form that I quite frankly don't have down yet. And I'm hoping I will. I'm learning it. I'm loving it. But it's definitely going to be rocky. You're definitely going to see me reading the teleprompter. I'm like, coming up. What? Oh, coming up next, are you losing your hair? Oh.
Well, if you get back down on those eyelashes, maybe you could read it, if you know what I mean. When you walked in here, I thought, sweet Jesus.
You have no idea. I've got glue on my eyeballs.
That's why you can't read them.
I can't see through my eyelashes. Paige's got these eyelashes. I'm in hell.
I say that with deep love in my heart. I really do, but they were huge. Those are big-ass lashes.
You have no idea. You have no idea. And I tell her, I'm like, Paige, I can't see through these things. And she's like, but the light,
pretty.
You look like you have no eyes. I'm like, how do I look like I have no eyes? It's insane. And we digress. Janice humiliates me with fake eyelashes. Thank you so much for breaking through that facade of beauty, Janice, to show people that I am truly a homely-looking individual.
No, you have natural beauty. You have natural beauty. I just was shocked when you walked in.
Oh, dear God. I scraped that goo off my face, though, pretty instantaneously. But anyway, our point
is
that you don't give up. You do not give up. And I got all the no's and I got all the, you know, oh God, I had a meeting with this woman, and I'll end on this. I had a meeting with this woman about a year and a half ago, and she's subsequently been fired. So, ha ha. But anyway, I sat down with her and I was like, I know I can do this. I you know, this is my passion. I want to do this, and I have the ability to learn the skills and this and that and the other. And she's like, there's definitely going to be a voice in daytime for the younger generation, the Xers and the Yers, but it's not you.
Some people are so harsh.
I was like this. I go, okay, well, who is it? Because I was like, oh my gosh, then who is it? All right, I want to know. And she goes, I'm not sure yet. I have my thoughts, but it's not you. And I was like, well, that sucked. Like, wah, wah. You know,
the little flower goes,
I like wilted. You know, but you know what she did? She gave me that much more desire to prove her wrong. I was like, I'm going to show that woman.
Yeah.
I'm going to show her that she's wrong. And again, revenge should never motivate you. But my point is that that type of rejection is all part of the game. It's all part of the game. And even if you listen to actors who talk about, I went on 100 auditions before I got one job. Harrison Ford has that story. It's part of it. And if you have a passion and you have a dream, don't give up on it. Do the work. Fight through it.
Do the work. Exactly.
Got to do the work. Got to do the work. And you've got to be positive, and you're going to have down days. And I remember talking to my shrink. I don't know if I've talked about this on the show before, but I was talking to him about Quitting Loser and there not being another door. You know, we tend to live life monkey bar to monkey bar. You know, it's like, okay, I lose this job, but I leave this job, but I've got that one. Or I don't want to leave this relationship until I've got someone else. And that's not a good way to live. And you've heard that expression, leap and the net will appear. So I realized and I recognized that on a spiritual level, on an energetic level, I had to create space for a new opportunity. And had I not left Loser and not signed a contract and created space, that opportunity never could have come in. But I had to sit for a year not knowing what I was going to do with myself after having already said I wasn't going to renegotiate my contract with Loser. So my shrink said, you know, listen to me. The door When one door closes, the other door opens. There's a reason that that saying exists, but you have to be patient, and it doesn't come on the time frame that you want it.
Yeah.
So anyway, long rambling.
No, I thought you were going in a certain direction, and
I was. I changed my direction.
But
I still want to talk about that thing I wanted to talk about, though.
Well, then we might have to do it next week.
Oh.
Because we need to talk to some people too. Unless depends on how long you want to.
No,
talk about
all right.
The other thing.
We should take calls. I like taking calls. That's the most important thing.
Yeah. So let's talk to some people, and we'll save that. And next week we'll talk about the thing you're going to talk about.
I got
about.
Something important to talk about.
I know. So
it's important.
Yeah. Important.
Okay.
Important.
Oh my God! Did you see The Help?
I haven't, but I bought the book, and I was told to read the book first. Is that true?
I cried and cried and cried. Well, I haven't read the book because I'm lazy. But I have to say, there's this unbelievable scene with this character, Abilene, and she's working with this little toddler. Don't worry, it's not a spoiler alert. But the toddler has an abusive parent, which is something I wanted to talk about, but I'll talk about it next week. And she says to her, because she's from the South, and she says, "You is beautiful. You is smart. You is important." And the little girl with pizza, and I was like this. Snot's pouring out of my nose.
Important.
Oh, eyelashes are falling off. The glue's melting. Anyway, all right. Who are we doing? Are we calling? We're doing calls.
We're going to take a breather, and then we're going to do some calls.
Oh, okay.
Okay. All right.
Groovy.
She don't know what she wants to be. All the pictures in the magazines. Holding hands, but she's mad at me. Cause she don't want to go. Don't want to go. I met her at Anthropology. A purple boots and a golden dream.
Okay, we are back, and Christy would like to talk to you.
Oh!
Christy wants to talk to you.
Well, of course she does.
Of course I do.
Of course she does. Hello there, Christy.
Hi, Miss Jillian. How are you?
I'm good, buddy. What's going on?
Well, okay, so here's my question for you. I have been on kind of a transformation journey for the last year and a half.
Okay.
I've lost 117 pounds.
Congratulations, by the way.
Just
pause for a minute and give me a second to say, wow, and good for you, and that's awesome.
Thank you. So I have discovered that as I near goals, so when I got near to being under 200 pounds, when I reached the 100-pound loss point, I get blocked, and I start to backpedal and self-sabotage, and it takes me a good 3 or 4 weeks to really break through to that goal. And I'm in one right now, and there's kind of a bunch of us that are all looking at each other like, what is going on? We know we still have X amount of pounds to lose. I still got about 30, and I'm continuing to work out, but there's just something messy going on, and I'm just curious what your thoughts are on that.
Okay, hang on one sec. Let me be super sure. How tall are you?
I am 5'4".
And how much do you weigh?
167.
Okay, fine. All right, yeah, I can see 30, but you're in the sort of, okay. Now, you say backpedaling. Backpedaling and plateau are two totally different things. Are you backpedaling,
right,
or are you in a, do you perceive that you're in a plateau?
I don't perceive it as a plateau, because I perceive a plateau as I'm still doing the same thing and
uh-huh.
it's not working.
Yes, you're absolutely right.
Yeah. I am backpedaling as in going back to bad habits.
Aha. Uh-huh.
And so I tend to like gain and lose. I've been gaining and losing the same 5 pounds for the last 8 weeks. And I was training for a triathlon, and so it was kind of a different mindset, but I'm just like, I'm ready to be done, and I'm ready to move forward, but I don't know.
You're ready to be done. I'm confused. What are you ready to be done with?
I'm ready to be done with this 5 pounds and this up and down and up and down.
Ah, okay.
You know, I'm ready to kind of just break through and keep going down.
Okay. So when you are eating something that you, I don't want to use the word shouldn't, something that isn't conducive to weight loss,
mm-hmm.
when you may or may not be, when you're not attending your workouts, what's going on?
I generally feel, well, it's kind of all about eating. My workouts haven't I'm kind of addicted to exercise. But,
okay. So when you're eating things you shouldn't, what's going on?
I feel like I'm breaking the rules and like I'm kind of rebelling a little bit. And
good. Rebelling against what?
I don't know.
Okay. And there we go. So I don't know. It's like a gigantic arrow pointing me in a direction that I need to dig deeper. So you said rebelling, and I said what you said. I don't know. And I don't know it's a defense mechanism that you don't even know you have. It just comes up. It's like, I don't know. It's an indication that you don't want to look deeper because looking deeper would hold something that is painful for you. So I don't know.
Right.
Is the first thing that comes up. All right. So how long have you been overweight?
Oh, ever, forever.
Okay. Tell me about being overweight as a kid.
Hell, absolute and utter hell. I mean, junior high and high school are just not the same when you weigh over 200 pounds. It's just not.
No, I can imagine.
I don't
want to hear about bullying though. Tell me about home.
My dad was a PE teacher.
Oh, honey, stop. Stop it. Stop. So you said rebelling. I said, what are you rebelling against? You said, I don't know.
Oh, yeah. But yeah. No, at that point, it was my dad. But he's been dead for...
At that point, it was your dad?
15 years. Oh, totally.
At that point.
Yeah.
And now?
Probably the same. Maybe the same. He's just been gone for so long.
No, honey, he's not gone inside of you. The voice of that father that disapproves is not gone inside of you. That's not gone at all. So tell me about that. I mean, you're an overweight kid. Your dad's a PE teacher. How did that work out for you?
Not great, considering my brother and sister were track and cross country stars, and I was the, I did drama. After a while, I just kind of felt like I was put in a corner and I just wasn't the one to be proud of.
Okay. So you felt like your father wasn't proud of you?
Yeah, very much so.
And that voice is still inside of you. You still feel like he's not proud of you. Doesn't matter if he's here physically or not. It doesn't matter even what you think he might think if you believed in an afterlife. That's irrelevant. The voice is in your head and in your heart. The message that you are not worth being proud of still exists. So you're rebelling now. You're still rebelling against him. And this isn't about you. You're not making it about you. You're making it about that. You're making it about, I'll show you. And I'm lovable no matter what weight I am, which is the truth. But you're not making this journey about you. It's not for you, or you'd stop rebelling.
That makes sense.
It has to be for you. It has to be about you, and it has to be something that you want, not because you're trying to please somebody, whether it's your dad or the sentiment from your father that you've put on society, be it high school, be it junior high, or be it peers now in your adult life, because we can mirror those insecurities and those shortcomings from our home life onto the outside world and perpetuate that alienation and those insecurities at our job, at school, and we recreate those scenarios. So what you need to do, are you pissed at your dad?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I've had a lot of conversations with him in my head as I run, and that's been helpful.
Okay. Okay, sweetie, you're having conversations with your dad as you run, which, by the way, still isn't about you. It's still about him, even when you're running. Do you understand?
Yeah.
Okay. I want you. You know, I'm a huge believer in counseling. Here's the truth. I can tell you to stop doing behavior A, right? Stop making this about your dad. But if I don't tell you to do B, C, D, E, then we're not anywhere.
Right.
You have to get to a place where you process your anger at your father. You look at your father's shortcomings and how he probably, I'm going to guess, but my guess is that he felt helpless with you, and it made him feel like he wasn't a good dad, and it made him feel like he wasn't doing his job, and it made him feel like he was inadequate with you, which quite honestly he was, because he just didn't have the tools. It wasn't malicious. It was just because he didn't have the tools and he didn't know any better. So in his desire to fix you because he felt like a bad father, you were interpreted it as you weren't worth being proud of, you weren't good enough, and you were something to be fixed. The solution for this lies in your ability to acknowledge your dad's weaknesses and your dad's shortcomings and realize that it wasn't because you weren't good enough. It wasn't because you weren't special enough. It was about him and you took it on. And so when you're rebelling, you're still rebelling against that father, that inner father. You've got to stop and really sit down and write down all the reasons why you want to lose weight. And what losing weight will do for your life, how it will improve your life personally, professionally, sexually. We're talking a lot of sex on the doctors lately, so I've gotten more comfortable with that word.
Oh, I'm so glad.
I'm like the S word. But I'm just saying, your whole romantically, like every aspect of your life, how will it improve? How will you be happier? This has got to become about you. And the conversations with your father, those can happen. You know, you can write him a letter. You can process it in therapy. You can understand. You need to understand him. Don't argue with him in your head. It doesn't serve a purpose. It's not about right or wrong. It's about understanding his weaknesses and his shortcomings and giving him back his issues. Stop internalizing that voice and the idea that you're not good enough, and start owning this journey and making it about you, not to be good enough for your dad. And when you can do that, you will blast through this obstacle, but it won't be easy.
Right. I don't need it to be easy.
Well, it won't be. I'm telling you right now.
Good for you.
Yeah.
It's not easy.
You're going to cry a lot and you're going to be pissed a lot. But if you can move through those emotions, they hold so much great reward on the other side. With all of that pain and all of that anger and all of that sadness comes great transformation and reward on the other end of it.
Okay. I love it. Thank you.
It's my pleasure. By the way, I'm proud of you. You lost a lot of weight. I'm very proud of you.
I have lost a lot of weight. And as of like tonight, I should be a personal trainer. My test is done.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Fantastic. I love that. Now I'm doubly proud.
That's very cool.
Thank you very much.
All right, little buddy. Have a great day.
All right, you too. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. Now who?
Well, now.
Don't end the show.
No, I'm not going to end the show.
I hate when you do that.
But I thought, we never talk about sex.
Oh, no. Oh, God. Oh, God, no.
No, I don't mean what we do, but we I think that's a good point. I'm going to write that down, that we should have a show on some sex.
No.
We have
gotten a behavioral expert on the show and on the doctors. And this woman is pretty much a sex therapist. I mean, she does talk about other things, but that's kind of like her area of expertise. And my head, I feel like my head's going to explode sitting next to her. Like, I want to put a gun to my head. And she'll talk about things like, they're going to cut it from the show, but she'll talk about things like fantasies will come up. And I'm like this, oh God, no, I'm dying. Right. And she's like, my fantasy is, and I mean, I can't even say it out loud. But she's like, you know, it involves like, oh my goodness gracious. I can't even tell you. Like, and my head, I feel like my head's going to burst. And she'll say words like genitalia. And I'm like, oh my God.
You are so,
I'm a prude.
You are such a prude.
I am a prude. I am uber shy.
Then you know what? Maybe
Look at the way I'm sitting right now. I'm curled in a ball in my
maybe
chair.
Maybe one day we'll get Dr. V to talk about, we'll do a sex show.
Oh, no. Ah!
No, I think it's good.
No.
I don't know what it'll be, but I'm going to get on that. I'm going to write
great.
That down on my list.
A sex show.
Yeah, just something about it.
The whole friggin' doctors, it's like, I feel like all we talk about is sex. I want to kill myself.
Because that's what people think about all the time.
Oh, boy.
They're not thinking about something, they're thinking about sex.
We did a show about, like, sex camp for men, and you know, it was really? Just, I wanted to die. I was dying.
I don't know if I want to do the sex camp.
Dying.
For men.
Like, we put these couples through, it was actually a fascinating show, but even looking at sex in America, sex with our youth, I can't give away too much, but there was one girl, a 14-year-old that had 26 sexual partners. I can't even tell you.
14?
14. I can't even tell. Oh. I was trying to go at the mother. And then, of course, Dr. Wendy and Dr. Lisa were going at me because I was going at the mother so hard. And I don't even want to tell you. Anyway, what's next?
Well, no, we'll take a little teeny breather. And then we'll come back.
A teeny breather.
Yeah, and then we've got time for one more call. And then the show has to end. Okay.
What are you talking? We're just warming up.
Well, that's what happens. That's what happens when we chitty chat chat.
Okay, where do you come up with this chitty chat chat?
That's my lingo.
I was listening to an old podcast of ours.
No.
And you said sanguich. Do you remember that?
The sanguich. You got to have a sanguich.
Where does this vernacular come from? Like, do you lay in bed and think about it?
It's from my upbringing.
Your parents said, let's have a chitty chat chat and a sanguich?
My dad would say.
Because I'm feeling hooped.
You're like an elephant. You remember everything.
No, just only about how totally dysfunctional you are.
I know. Well, that's true. Maybe we'll do there's another show. Dysfunctional. Let's take a break.
Working all week, 9 to 5 for my money. So when the weekend comes, I can go get live with the honey. Rolling down the street, I saw this girl when she was pumping. I winked my eyes, got into the ride, went to a club with jumping. Introduced myself as Lo, she said, you're a liar. I said, I got it going on, baby doll, and I'm a fire.
Okay, we have time for one more, and Sherry is waiting on the line.
Ooh, I'm excited. Sherry,
hello.
What's going on?
Hi.
How you doing?
Not too bad here in the heartland. It's a beautiful day.
Oh, good. I like to hear that. So tell me what's going on. What's your question?
Okay, my question is, I was very blessed up until about age 45. I weighed 100 pounds. You know, because like God was good to me, and I didn't even know it. I had 2 kids. The weight would fall right off after each one, you know, so I'm just trooping along.
Okay.
Kids got raised, and then I hit perimenopause. And it's like, okay, I'm up a size. And it's like I just kept putting on weight till I got to this 150. And this kind of seems to be where I'm plateauing, but I don't like it. I'm only 5'2.5". That's, you know, way too much for my height. And, you know, I have a small bone structure anyways.
Okay.
And so I need your recommendation.
Okay, little buddy. So hold on a second. Here's what I'm hearing. I'm hearing that you were blessed by God.
That God blessed you.
And then he turned his back on you. And okay, hold on. And then he, okay. So, and then you went into perimenopause and you started gaining weight. But you have dieted or you haven't dieted?
Yeah, I have. I've tried to be careful and, you know, a few times, but then I get so hungry, like in the middle of the night, I wake up and I have to eat because I'm just starving to death.
Okay. So tell me, give me an idea of what your diet looks like. I got a feeling it's off,
okay.
Slightly off base here.
Of course, about 1 or 2 cups of coffee in the morning, and
okay.
I will have maybe, say, a piece of, you know, good bread with, I'll fry an egg and some olive oil,
mm-hmm.
and Activia yogurt.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, for a mid-morning snack, I might have an apple or maybe a couple of carrots that I've peeled.
Okay.
And then lunch, it depends on if I'm at home or at work. You know, I might have a nice salad with some protein on it, or...
Okay, hold on. Watch this. I'm going to tell you right now. Here's what I've found with people. I did a segment with Dr. Phil today. And we were going through the segment, right, of this woman and what she feeds her kid was overweight. And she, you know, and she's telling me, she's like, I eat this and I eat that and I feed him this and I 4 ounces of chicken and, you know, some whipped up pureed veggies. And he's like, wow, it's like a spa at your house, the spa diet. And then we watch the video of what she feeds the kid and it's a burrito. And Dr. Phil goes, when was an adult sized burrito on the spa diet? And okay, so here's my question, because it sounds fairly healthy, I'm not even going to let you finish though, because you're like a salad and a little chicken. And a little. So are you counting calories?
No, I don't.
Okay, so there's your problem. Okay, so I'm going to tell you exactly what's happening. With menopause, a lot of women are like, oh my God, I've gone through menopause and it's impossible. But the truth of the matter is that They never learned how to eat healthy or how to be healthy, because many women didn't have to. So now that you're going through menopause, or you're in your perimenopause, or you're in the beginning stages of menopause, what's happening is your hormone balance is changing. Okay. So where you store weight has to do with hormone balance. So for example, men are testosterone dominant. They carry weight in their abdomen. Women who are estrogen dominant will carry weight in their lower body. Or if that female has a higher level of testosterone, she'll carry weight more in her midsection. As women go through menopause, they tend to carry it more in their waist. Is that what's happening with you?
Yeah, my waist has increased 10 inches.
There you go. Okay. So the problem here, though, is that you've never had to watch your weight before, right? So now
right.
that the hormones are changing, you're eating like you always used to eat, but you used to get away with, quite honestly, what sounds like bloody murder from what I, you know.
I did.
Yeah.
I did.
Okay. So now all we need to really do is give you an education about counting calories, because fat is stored energy and a calorie is a unit of energy. So what's happening is you're simply eating more energy than your body is burning. Now, weight loss is a really simple energy equation of less calories in, more calories out. We can maximize calories out with exercise. And that can be anything you like. It could be jazzercise classes with friends. It could be a spin class. It could be walking, you know, with your family, walking the dog. It can be, you get me, you know, as long as you, I just want to say, shake your butt. That's, I want you moving your little booty 3 to 4 times a week, at least for 30 minutes at least. Now, of course, I would love to see 5 minutes for five times a week for an hour. But if you did 3 to 4 times a week for 30 minutes, we would all live and I would still be happy. Okay. Your results would be slower, but I would still be happy. So that's number one, is moving your body. Then beyond that, you need to learn how to count calories, buddy. And it's real simple. All you got to do is get yourself a little calorie counter, download a calorie counting app. You can buy a calorie counter for like $5. I have one. So what I will do is I will have Janice get your address and I'll have my assistant send you. I had a little Master Your Metabolism calorie counting book. It's small. You can take it everywhere with you. And this way you can add up your calories. And it sounds really tedious, but you'll find that you're a creature of habit. Like, you eat that breakfast every day. So once you know what's in it, it's like, oh, okay, that's my breakfast. My piece of toast has 80 calories. My egg has 80 calories. You start to learn and you don't need to look it up anymore. It becomes less tedious. But I had a person that I was helping out lose weight and she's like, it's not coming off me. And I go, dude, you're not counting calories. And she's like, I am. I swear to you, I'm getting 1600. And so we went through the whole thing and she was getting 2500 because she had no idea that a banana had 80 calories in it. She's like, that's insane. I was like, that's a small one. A big one has like 90 to 100 calories in it. So you got to start getting on top of those calories. I would say while you're in weight loss mode, I would eat 1,200 calories. I would cut out alcohol completely because it's no friend to weight loss. I'll tell you that right now.
Makes you hungry.
it's alcohol is the devil when it comes to weight loss. So we want to cut that out. Okay, we want to be getting 1,200 to 1,400 calories. Think that I like to say green vegetables are free, so in case you're like, I'm starving, load up. You can eat a high volume of food, but that is still low in calories. So, for example, I might have a piece of fish and a side of quinoa or something, which is a grain, or some black beans. Like, for example, I'll go for Brazilian food, right? I get a piece of grilled salmon and a huge thing of steamed vegetables. I don't get them sautéed. And then I put my little salsa stuff. They make this salsa stuff that I put on top of it. And it's gigantic. It is literally like I could wrap my arms around this plate of veggies that they bring me. And it's awesome. It's got like spinach, a little bit of corn, tomatoes, peppers. And they put that salsa on it. And it tastes amazing. And then I get a side of black beans. And the black beans are like 200 calories, maybe 250, and my salmon's like 300 calories, and my veggies have no calories, and then there's a little bit of oil, dear God, there's a little bit of oil in the salsa, so I'm probably getting like 500-600 calories, which is kind of high for dinner. You don't eat all that food, so only because I'm not in weight loss mode. I could easily bring that down to 500 if there wasn't any olive oil in there, or I made the piece of fish slightly smaller, and I fill myself up on that and I'm like, bleh, like I'm exploding. I'm so full, but I'm a person, you know, it's my fat girl thing. I got to eat a lot of food. And so I go to the veggies and I load up on those. And then I have smaller amounts of the higher calorie stuff, like the black beans or the grains or what have you. So counting calories, that is where you're going wrong here. This is not about menopause. It's just that up until now you were getting away with murder. Now we need to sort of rein it back in and get you counting calories. That's for weight loss. And then when you get to a target weight, you can eat about 1,600 calories and maybe even 1,800 on the days that you're working out. But, really? Again, the quality of your food is going to be key. So another thing that you really want to do is avoid processed foods. Try to eat as fresh as possible. If it doesn't have a mother and it doesn't come from the ground, try not to eat it.
I read your book. I love that.
Oh, see? Okay. But now the only thing you got to do with that is count calories.
Okay.
Then you'll be in perfect shape. And shake your butt. All right?
Okay. And God loves you.
Yeah. He still does love you, even though he's turned his back on your metabolism a little bit.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Sherry. That's funny.
All right, buddy.
All right. Well, thank you so much for calling.
All right. Thank you. We appreciate your call.
All right. Well, I got you online. I have you online on my computer, and I read your emails every day, so I really like your inspiration.
Oh, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Yeah, you're a real role model, I think, for a lot of people.
Oh, God, don't say that.
That's always trouble.
No, you are.
Oh, well, I appreciate it. Thank you, buddy. I really appreciate all of it, and you have an awesome day, okay? And we'll get that book out to you ASAP.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
I hate the role model thing. I hate it. Ugh.
Well,
it's trouble.
Remember I told you. Just sometimes say.
Yeah, but it's not even like a, that's not even the same thing as like a, oh, you changed my life. The role model thing just sets you up to fail. I don't like it.
I'll keep you in check. Don't worry.
No. It's just like, you know, they want you to be the role model and then you do something they don't like and then they're disappointed in you.
No,
that's you're doing that. I'm not doing that.
That is you,
and God knows you're not a role model.
We're gonna say goodbye.
Okay.
Yeah, we have to say goodbye.
Okay. Bye. Bye. Peace. Alabama.
If you like listening to comedy, try watching it on the internet. The folks behind the Sideshow Network have launched a new YouTube channel called Wait For It. It's got interviews with comedians like Reggie Watts, Todd Glass, Liza Schlesinger, I've been friends with her for 10 years, one of the funniest people out there, and I still have a hard time with the last name, Liza. Our very own Owen Benjamin, that's me, takes you on a musical journey down internet rabbit holes and much more. You don't have to wait any longer. Just go to youtube.com/waitforitcomedy. There's no need to wait for it anymore because it's here and it's funny. And I love you.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.